as well.
This call is being recorded.
Because oftentimes we get people who are members who want to listen to the call after the fact, and so we will record it. Just be cognizant of that. You can also obviously engage with us offline if you're more comfortable in doing that, mpriest@fdra.org or tcrockett@fdra.org, and we'll be happy to kind of engage with you offline if you prefer that forum relative to this one. So the goal of this call is to kind of talk through what we're hearing and seeing when it comes to the next kind of action relating to the tariffs that the Trump administration has placed on a variety of different U.S. imports of Chinese goods. We talked about some of this at FTDC last week, but there have been developments since that time. We wanted to get on the phone and keep people apprised of that. And then we will determine some kind of cadence going forward, either every 2 weeks and then every week if needed, moving on from here, just to ensure that people are squared away and that you have all the right information going forward, because things are kind of moving fast and feverishly. And then what we'll do, we're going to go through the latest, and then we're going to bring in John Pellegrini, our customs attorney, because we are starting to think through strategies if and when this does take effect or go into place, which is not a foregone conclusion, but if it does happen, strategies you all can explore and employ to ensure that if there's a transition out of China to places like Vietnam or elsewhere, that you understand the rule of origin and what substantial transformation means and what precedent is out there that relates to customs rulings that impact how footwear is treated when a process, when product has moved from one place to another and then changed in, through a manufacturing process in some way. So we're going to talk to John about that and alert you to something we're going to do to provide more clarity, and then we can also have any questions that you see fit. But obviously, Monday, there was a Bloomberg report stating that the administration was prepared to move to tariffs on $267 billion in Chinese goods, which is ultimately the remaining amount of goods that China ships us, if they don't get what they want out of the meeting with President Xi Jinping on November 29th, the day before the G20 summit starts in Argentina. And it dawned on me, I was in New York at the time, it dawned on me that it was exactly 30 days out from that meeting that they put this out there. And of course, the stock market went from 50 points up to 200 or 300 down. I can't remember what the number was at the time. And it kind of reverberated throughout the economy at that time. Since that, we've had a number of comments from the president, a number of published reports that have tried to put context around this. One of which is the president the next day on the 30th of October was having a conversation with Laura Ingraham on Fox News Channel. And he said, quote, "I think that we will make a great deal with China, and it has to be great because they've drained our country." And then he went on to say that he would like to make a deal now, but that China was not ready, and he did not really say why he thought they were not ready. But that was kind of his first thing that he said since that Bloomberg report had come out. And then one of the things that we keep hearing and keep kind of pointing to is the fact that China's economy is starting to show signs of duress. From an article that posted yesterday in the South China Morning Post, Hong Kong-based newspaper owned by Alibaba, or Jack Ma at Alibaba, "The Chinese economy is slowing faster than expected. Worse yet to come," analysts say, is the headline. Some kind of tidbits out of that article: business sentiment in both the manufacturing and non-manufacturing sectors was weaker than expected in October, led by sharp declines in export demand, according to the official Purchasing Managers Index published on Wednesday by the National Bureau of Statistics and the China Federation of Logistics and Purchasing. The article goes on to say that the manufacturing sentiment index dropped to 50.2 in October from 50.8 a month earlier. The reading, which was its lowest in more than 2 years and barely above the 50-point line that separates expansion from contraction in the sector, suggests the possibility of contraction in November as the U.S. tariffs take effect. This being obviously the tariffs, the first three lists that we've seen announced. And then from another quote there, in retaliation, China might try to implement qualitative measures such as more aggressive inspections of imports from the U.S., creating stiffer visa requirements for visiting American workers, slowing regulatory approval for U.S. companies operating in China, or targeting service imports from the U.S., including restricted the enrollment of Chinese students in American universities. And in a research note released last week, Cochran, who's an analyst here, being quoted, estimated that if a 20% tariff were imposed on all China-U.S. trade and Beijing applied qualitative countermeasures, China's GDP growth would fall by 1.2 percentage points to 5.2%, which is essentially recession territory for China because of its the size of its population and the need it has to grow its economy and create jobs. The stock market would fall by almost 10%. So I think the White House sees these numbers and expects that the Chinese are entering into a kind of a posture of needing a deal sooner rather than later. Whether that holds true, I don't know, but you can see why the White House might be emboldened by some of these actions and why they would have been in a position to want to put out the note that they did to Bloomberg on Monday to start again adding pressure to this dynamic, this meeting that's being put forth. The last thing I'll point to, interestingly enough, is a tweet by the president this very morning at about 10 o'clock this morning, 10:09 a.m. And I quote, "Just had a long and very good conversation with President Xi Jinping of China. We talked about many subjects with a heavy emphasis on trade. Those discussions are moving along nicely with meetings being scheduled at the G20 in Argentina. Also had good discussion on North Korea!" Exclamation point. So it seems to me, being the optimist that I am, is that they might be trying to maneuver towards some kind of outcome that they can announce, hopefully after this meeting of the two heads of state. That can all go awry, as we all know, with this government. So it's hard to predict. But if you just take a look at the modus operandi the president operates under, if you look at the USMCA, the NAFTA 2.0 agreement, we went from the worst deal ever negotiated in the history of mankind, which is what he called it from the campaign all the way through his inauguration, to we're going to make it the best deal ever, and then negotiating the outcome with just the Mexicans, and then finally getting the Canadians on board. And then ultimately, if you look at the agreement, it's not that radical. It's not that far of a departure from TPP as it was negotiated. And then you have the European conflict where we threatened tariffs a multitude of times. We applied tariffs, and then the European Commission kind of has, the head of the European Commission came over and met with the president, and they declared a ceasefire. And now, since then, the Trump administration has notified Congress of its desire to negotiate a free trade agreement with the Europeans pursuant to the Trade Promotion Authority requirements that are incumbent upon the administration to adhere to in order to start those negotiations. So here we are, kind of bluster, tantrum, threat of tariffs, actually implementing tariffs on products that may not be as impactful on consumers, creating a third list that goes from 10% to automatically 25% on January 1st. You're creating this kind of vacuum of pressure surrounding the November 29th meeting. And then ultimately you announce your willingness to go even further and capture all trade, that creates ingenious in the sense that it creates this pressure, particularly right before midterm, before the meeting, but also does not actually implement the duties and harm American consumers as much as it would if you did do that. And so that's kind of how I'm feeling about it right now, which could change an hour from now. I have so many kind of disclaimers on this conversation, but that's kind of how I'm feeling right now. If we want to play this out, let's just say that the administration has this, the president has this meeting, and it doesn't go well, or there's a reason why the president doesn't want to declare victory and outline why he thinks the meeting was successful, and they announce the intent to move forward on December, the first week of December, as was indicated in the Bloomberg report, then you will see, I think, if we play that out, you'll have public comment, a hearing, and then we're looking at kind of the Chinese New Year, the implementation date, ironically, which again is the top purchasing time in the Chinese economy. So if ours is the holidays from Black Friday to Christmas, then, you know, for the Chinese economy, it's Chinese New Year's Lunar New Year. So again, you have this threat that, okay, if we pull the trigger on this, we're going to just crush you right around the time in your economy, right around the time that that Chinese New Year is fully in kind of in play. So there are all these really interesting kind of variables that are swirling around, and we wanted to provide that context of how we're thinking about this. As this announcement was made on Monday, the stock market went down. The president has since made these statements subsequently to kind of put, you know, to kind of lay this out as he sees it. And then these are just kind of our reactions. Next, I'm going to pivot over to Thomas just to provide an update or quick reminder of the timing on the other list, just so you have kind of historic, you have kind of the historic precedent as it relates to this process. And he's going to walk you through the timing. And then we'll, from there, we'll start talking more about rules of origin and supply chain shifts and things that you guys should be thinking about as it relates to altering your supply chain strategies based on these current threats.
Thanks. So we've gotten a lot of questions on timing. If the president did decide to move forward with tariffs on China, how long would companies have to adjust? And we can look back at the earlier three lists and kind of get some sense of the process. We would expect there to be a hearing process with list four when it comes out, if it comes out. And again, footwear would be on that, because if it includes every product from every remaining product from China, that would definitely include footwear. But so the first list that came out, which ended up being $34 billion, that list was initially announced or released on April 3rd. There were public hearings on that in mid-May. The hearing process closed. And then 3 weeks later, on June 15th, the finalized version of that list was released by the administration. So there were 3 weeks between the time the hearings ended and the time that the finalized list was released. 3 weeks after that, on July 6th, the first round of tariffs went into effect. So with that one, you had 3 weeks between hearing close to finalized list, and then another 3 weeks before the tariffs took effect. With the second round of tariffs, you had, those were initially announced on June 15th, and that those were, this was a little bit different because this was basically already in the works. It, these were part of the original, there was originally $50 billion, and that was cut down to $34 billion. And so the list was basically split, and it created a lot of confusion, and probably with some of our updates, it may have been confusing too, but that was, this is the second list. With that list, you had, so again, that was released on June 15th, and then there was a hearing on that list in mid-July, and then on August 8th, the finalized version of that list was released, and on August 23rd, the tariffs took effect. So with that one, you really had about just a couple of weeks between the close of the hearing process and when the tariffs, the finalized list came out, and then a couple more weeks before the announcement, before the tariffs took effect. And then with the third list, which is the biggest, the $200 billion list, that was announced on, or released on July 10th. There was a big six-day hearing from August 20th through the 27th. And then once the hearing process closed on September 6th, it was only about a week before that final list was released, and then another week before the tariffs took effect on September 24th. And if you look, if you look at all three of them, you see the first list, there was about a three-month period with the announcement, the hearings, and the tariffs taking effect. That whole process took about 3 months. List two and list three both took about 2 months, just a little over 2 months. From the time the list was announced, you had the hearings, and then the final announcement, and then the tariffs went into effect. So there is a process. There is about a two-month period once that list is announced. What's interesting about the third list is there's not an exclusion process for it. There's not the first two lists had a mechanism where companies could come in after the finalized list was released and ask for their products to be excluded from that list, and that's not here. And so you've seen for the third list, the $200 billion list, you've seen a lot of pushback from the Hill on that. What's really interesting is every week there's a new letter coming from Congress expressing frustration, expressing concern. There was the first one on October 15th, had 169 members of Congress, bipartisan letter, 48 Democrats, 121 Republican Senate. There was another one after that led by Representative Pascrell from New Jersey with 48 Democrats. Another one from Senator Kaine with 10 Democrats that was also sent to the White House. And there's another one that is likely coming out this week that's a Republican letter. So there's a lot of feedback on the absence of an exclusion process for the biggest list. That's a huge concern from the Hill. And interestingly, you're seeing a lot of trade skeptics on these, or you're seeing some trade skeptics on these letters who are arguing about the process being unfair. And so before, even those that they may have different views on trade, they were saying, well, there's a process here. And now there's some arguments that this $200 billion list, there's frustration that the process is not as open and as fair as it should be. So that's kind of, those are a couple of things that are to keep in mind. It's the timing, when this would take effect, and the fact that there is growing frustration on the Hill at how this is all unfolding and continuing to unfold.
Thanks, Thomas. The other thing we don't have line of sight into is the fact that if they were to move ahead, what would it look like? Would it be 10% with some kind of another deadline that goes into effect several months after that at 25%, again, to create some kind of pressure for some kind of meeting or some kind of negotiation? It's hard to know. There just seems to be a lot of public support that the Chinese expect that most of the movement will come when the heads of state get together, and that they hope and they think that it's way more likely that when the two heads of state get together, they'll have some kind of outcome that's beneficial or some kind of resolution where both sides can save face. I can tell you from past administrations being involved in the process as well as kind of as an outsider looking in, when two heads of state get together and they're deliverables, there could be months and months of negotiations and talks between staff and aides and the folks that are trying to pull all of it together in time for the meeting for which the heads of state will just kind of sign off and in a ceremonial conclusion to a month-long negotiation. And it doesn't seem to me that is happening right now. It's almost as if that they probably are having conversations here and there, and they're obviously going to be setting up the meeting to take place, and the advanced teams will be working to facilitate the meeting, but the actual outcomes of that meeting won't be predetermined, and it might be after the fact, after the president walks out, where he announces something, or they announce, didn't go according to plan, and it's full steam ahead on the fourth list. So, of course, we'll be tracking it closely and be sure to keep people informed. From here, let's talk about supply chain. John, I'm gonna unmute you just so you can so that you can kind of chime in as you see fit. I think it's in the process of unmuting you right now, but you can also hit ** and you'll be placed in. We are getting a lot of questions, rightfully so, about how to think about the movement of the supply chain, and not thinking about, for our argument's sake, we'll use China and Vietnam as kind of the stereotypical way people are probably thinking about this right now, but to not think about there being a wall, a border between the two, where you have to get everything shifted over to Vietnam in order to avoid 301 if and when that takes effect. But there are ways, and there's precedent, to think about the movement of the supply chain, even if it's temporary, to continue to bring products, not product, but components, parts, materials out of China into Vietnam in order to do some kind of substantial transformation of that product in Vietnam for it to become a product of Vietnam and avoid the 301 duties. And so I know several of you are thinking through that, and we wanted to have John to come on. John, Thomas, and I were batting around and reviewing a number of different rulings that have come out over the years. Many of them are stale, not necessarily because they don't apply necessarily, but because they're older. There's one from 1994. It's a feel issue that was materials were from Italy, shipped to the Czech Republic. A non-unformed upper was created in the Czech Republic, and an outsole or midsole was sent back to Italy. It was, we won't go to all the reasoning, but it was assembled in Italy and ultimately became a product of Italy. And so we wanted to kind of have that conversation. John, if you want to kind of provide a brief review of your thoughts as it relates to the supply chain and country of origin and ways in which people should be thinking about strategizing against any kind of impending tariff imposition.
All right, sure. The basic rule is final assembly creates origin with two major exceptions. If one of the inputs is a farmed upper, or the input is a what I'll call a rubber ducky or a bean boot bottom, which is a molded bottom that has both the outsole and parts of the upper to which a shaft is attached. So if the shoe is made in country B from either of those components from country A, then the country of origin is country A, and the country of origin doesn't change. So as long as you avoid either of those two things, final assembly should confer origin. However, there are some old rulings, and these are mostly on uppers. Uppers, whether they're farmed or not farmed, went from country A to country B. And customs applied a principle known as constructive assembly. So as many of you may know, if you have a formed upper, which is a fully lasted closed upper, but if it has a hole in the bottom, then it's not treated as a formed upper. But there have been situations where importers or manufacturers shipped that formed upper with a hole in the bottom with an equal number of sock linings. And customs ruled that they would constructively assemble those two pieces, and you therefore close the hole, close the bottom, you have a formed upper. That was avoided in rulings by shipping an unequal number of sock linings with the uppers. So you can't do a constructive assembly if the numbers aren't exactly the same. So whether that'd be extended to footwear parts, in other words, sending to Vietnam from China an equal number of bottoms and uppers are not formed, and the bottoms are not bean boot bottoms, would customs say that we would constructively assemble those two things, and because they came in equal numbers, the country of origin remains the place where the upper and or the bottoms were made? I don't think so, but I think that's something we got to be aware of. Assembling shoes is not a simple process. It's not simple assembly. So the chances are that would not be the case, but it's out there. And I think we have to assume, as Matt said, that customs hasn't looked at this issue for a long time, the country of origin of footwear, where construction takes place in multiple countries. And they may well be tougher, all right, in situations where we are trying to avoid legitimately very high duties. So I just want to throw that out there. There was a recent ruling on engine or some motor parts that went from China to Mexico, where New York ruled that under the NAFTA marking rules, the country of origin was Mexico, for marking purposes and for origin purposes. Well, headquarters looked at that and said, no, that's not the case. The NAFTA marking rules are for marking only. They don't determine substantial transformation necessarily. So they finally determined that the simple assembly in Mexico of these two or three components was not a substantial transformation. Therefore, the country of origin remained China, even though the correct country of origin marking was Mexico, all right? Now, we actually have that situation under CAFTA, where under CAFTA, you could actually use a formed upper to make a shoe in CAFTA, all right, and get CAFTA benefits, but the country of origin is China, assuming that the formed upper obviously came from China. So that's not an unprecedented situation. Now, the FILA ruling that Matt mentioned does rely upon the NAFTA marking rules, all right, which you can no longer do. But in any event, the NAFTA marking rules as they apply to footwear are pretty much the same rule as substantial transformation. So, and it does make it clear that you can't use a formed upper or a rubber ducky bottom. So that ruling doesn't really affect us too much because, as I said, the NAFTA marketing rules is applied to footwear, pretty much express the basic substantial transformation rule in terms of tariff changes. So I think the only caveat is you can assemble the country of origin is going to be the place of final assembly, but if it's a really simple shoe, you have to be very careful of not shipping everything together. So what I would suggest is if it's something you're thinking about, you may think about getting a ruling. Because we really don't know what customs will do if they get a ruling request now, because they haven't looked at this probably since, their FILA ruling is 2004, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any questions?
Yeah, well, before we kind of open it up, John, I think a couple things come to mind. I think in general, keeping in mind the rulings that we have and just kind of the overall precedent we have in a lot of different areas is that if you're moving unformed uppers into somewhere, you're shipping them unformed uppers in bulk, and then maybe on a separate day you're shipping the outsoles and you're putting those together in a different country than the origin of the parts, and you're able to hang out in 6406, then it's going to be country of origin, Vietnam, or wherever that final process takes place. And I think we feel pretty confident of that.
Yeah.
And knowing that a lot of people will be doing this temporarily as they try to upscale to places like Vietnam or elsewhere. But the other thing we want to do is to go and ask customs in an informational sense about how they still view these things. And so we hope to do that fairly soon, but welcome any examples, and you can send this to me offline. Any examples or processes that you're considering within the supply chain to mitigate some of this impact if and when these tariffs go into effect, so that we can include that scenario in a general sense without your name. Some people I know don't like to go get ruling requests or rather have the vague nature of it and not get boxed in necessarily. But as your association, we're willing to go to customs with an informational request to see how they're thinking about this. If substantial transformation is still at how we think about it as an industry, just to provide a little extra cover, not knowing if they'll respond or not, but that's something we're considering. So if you have some kind of process or some kind of scenario you want to pose to us to include in a general sense, we encourage you to do that sooner rather than later. So with that, any questions? Anyone have any questions about any of this? You just hit ** and you'll be put into the call. Does anyone have any questions or comments about the information we shared on today's call? I will say, as we wait for potential questions to come in, a published report just came out, kind of the Chinese readout of the call between the presidents. And apparently President Trump requested the call of Xi Jinping, so it was on our side and not theirs. And according to the Chinese report, Xi said both he and Trump have good visions for a healthy, stable development of the China-U.S. relationship, as well as expanding economic and trade cooperation, and they should make efforts to realize the wishes. So it seems to me to have been a cordial call, at least, and that the president's quote as being a very good conversation was one that was also put out by the Chinese state media. So take that with a grain of salt. But nevertheless, that was the Chinese side readout. Any questions or any comments that folks might have?
Matt?
Yeah.
It's Rick. How are you?
Hey, Rick. Doing well.
Good. Last week when we spoke, you had mentioned the possibility of some coalition of industries that would be affected in this last list of looking into a way, some process that might slow down if the intention to add the rest of the products is announced by beginning of December. Is there anything you could enlighten us on that?
Yeah.
Giving it more time for them to work out their differences to get to a resolution.
Yeah. So you're referencing there have been rumblings of potential of some kind of lawsuit, and that, you know, that is part of a group of industries that obviously have never seen duties before or have very low duties. And we have been a part of those conversations about whether or not we kind of put ourselves out there in some way to try and get a temporary injunction against any kind of action that the White House might announce in December. It's been some time since we all connected as associations. We're talking anyway more broadly, but there's a subset of that group that's had these other conversations about legal action. And again, if this is all off the record to if anyone's on this call that's from press or anything else, but we, you know, there's nothing that I can report that's beyond just kind of preliminary conversations about the impact, the likelihood of winning any kind of injunction, and how that would move forward. But we will keep folks apprised of that if that comes to fruition.
Thanks. Matt, I would say the chances of an injunction are pretty slim.
Yeah, and that's been kind of the hesitancy, I think, on just about everyone involved about investing in that effort, because of the fact that the president, even if this can get really weedy quickly, but even if this is outside of the four walls of a Section 301 investigation, which we would argue it is at this point, particularly with List 3, that the courts would give the administration wide authority, liberal authority to kind of under the Trade Act of 1974 to pursue these actions.
And people somebody did file a request for an injunction in the 332, which is the metal, where it seems to me there's a stronger argument because national security on tariffs from Canada, and the court said, you know, no, you may be right, but we're not giving you an injunction.
Right. Other questions or comments that folks have?
Yeah, I had a question. Can you explain moving the uppers and the outsoles separately again?
Yeah, it's just this notion that the last thing you want to do, and you may not need to do this, but just as a kind of a general rule, the last thing you want to do is be seen kind of shipping a kit around that's a box with a bunch of footwear parts that you just kind of put together like a puzzle in a different country, and then you can claim that country. And you might even be able to get the appropriate origin based on that scenario. But if you can avoid the optics of that, if you can ship in bulk a bunch of unformed uppers and then the next day ship in bulk all the outsoles over, same facility, but different shipments, different days, it just provides an optical kind of protection, for lack of a better term, to ensure it doesn't look like you're shipping around formed uppers with a couple little parts that are assembled within a kit. Okay. John, is that
Yeah, that's accurate. Now, there are no rulings on that in the footwear. There are rulings in other areas on that. And the rulings that address that issue deal with uppers and whether an upper is a formed upper or not formed upper. So what I would suggest is if we go in for an information letter, that's one of the scenarios that we posit. In fact, a kit, including an upper which has not been lasted, with all of the other components, and you'd have to last the upper in country B. I can't imagine that would not be a substantial transformation. But you need to, I think something would we feel a lot better with an information letter saying they agree with us.
Our Paragon computer grid.
Any other questions or comments? Well, what we'll do is we're going to keep tracking this second by second, moment by moment. If there's some kind of action or reason for us to provide another update, you know, soon we will do that. In the meantime, we encourage you to engage with us. We have I'm having calls every day, kind of one-on-one with companies that are our members. So if you want to have those, please, by all means, you're not imposing on us. We want you to have all the information possible to make, you know, the best decisions you can. We don't have all the answers clearly, and we go by kind of we're trying to put together this mosaic, if you will, to create a general sense of where we think this is headed, which could totally be wrong at some point. The rug could be yanked out from under us. But at the same time, we want everyone to feel kind of empowered and equipped and have the ability to engage with us as you see fit. So please, if this isn't the right form for you, that's totally cool. We get that. Just shoot us a note, and we'll set up a call, and we'll walk through these things in more specificity with you and your sourcing teams, your China office, you know, wherever. We've been on the phone at night, in the morning, early morning, whatever it takes. So we know this is a hectic time for everybody, and it's disconcerting, but we want to be here for you. So just let us know. If there are no other questions, we'll end the call here. Just be on the lookout for further updates from us. We joke around. We kind of treat this like celebrity obituaries of people who haven't died yet. We have pre-written outcomes, and it's the time we send it out. But in the meantime, if something hits the fan, we start to hear something, we will definitely have more regular calls so that you're more up to speed. But don't let that preclude you from engaging with us between calls as well. So anyway, that's that, unless we have any other calls. And we appreciate your attention, John. Thank you so much for your guidance.
Care.
And we'll talk to everyone later. Thanks.